This is Maurice Jones-Drew, and you're listening to the What's Brewing Show.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is time for West Coast Bias, the show brought to you all the way from the best coast. It's the West Coast Bias, that is. Aw, yeah.
Hello, and welcome to West Coast Bias. I'm your host, Jake Merrifield. I'm joined here by my good friend, Jamal Artis, at Champs Papa 1015. Jamal is here, and he did something very special that I'm not going to dawdle about because, you know, quite frankly, we've been podcasting for 2+ hours. Jamal's wife is sitting inside my house waiting for this man to take her home because, you know, hey, you know, it's late night. They have a babysitter, and, you know, things could happen. We'll see. But, Jamal, you did a cool thing in that you interviewed an actual professional person who does cool professional sports things. What did you do, Jamal?
I interviewed Jill Painter Lopez, who is an award-winning broadcaster. You can see her on she's an MLB Network correspondent. She's been on Fox Sports as a sideline reporter. She does play-by-play for ESPN Plus and the Flow Network. She's also a writer for the Associated Press. So we talked all sorts of West Coast sports. We talked Dodgers, Lakers. Her views on you know, the recent upheaval in the Anaheim Ducks front office, where she was a sideline reporter for their television partner, and we talked about free agency, and we talked about you know, her thoughts on, you know, how as somebody who's covered the Big West, how maybe we could find a burgeoning Big West power, you know, out here in California, maybe at LMU, maybe Pepperdine. So we talked all sorts of stuff about the West Coast, you know, sports, and she confirmed my thoughts. There is an East Coast bias, and she loved being on the West Coast Bias show. So that's we got a lot to discuss, and it was great having her on, and it was a pleasure.
Awesome. And, of course, you know, this is the What's Brewing Show Network. West Coast Bias is a part of that. If you want to listen to a whole lot of Bruin talk, the B Team published an episode last night in which they just lose their shit. Unbelievably, it's very entertaining, about the hiring of Lincoln Riley and what it means for UCLA. And then we just finished recording a two-part episode of the What's Bruin Show, the What's Bruin Symposium. Part one is about football, the victory over Cal. Jamal, I know that, you know, you enjoyed that victory a lot, didn't you? What do you have to say about that victory, Jamal? Do you have this to say?
Go, Bruins! Beat the Golden Bears! Beat them as hard as you can! Beat them with impunity!
It will never get old.
Bite me.
Yeah, but yeah, so that happened. And then the second part was about, you know, basketball and some more stuff. And Mike did a cool interview about UCLA hockey. And then this great episode of West Coast Bias. All three shows on one great feed. Support us on Patreon, whatsbruinshow.com or patreon.com/whatsbruinshow. And for just $2 a month, you can send the What's Brewing Show, the West Coast Bias, and the UCLA B Team into the future. We appreciate you. We appreciate your support. And thank you. So without further ado, let's get to that wonderful interview Jamal did with Jill Painter Lopez.
And joining us today on West Coast Bias, she is a triple threat in sports journalism as a writer, a sideline reporter, and currently up in the broadcaster booth, it's Jill Painter Lopez. Jill, welcome to West Coast Bias.
Thanks for having me on, Jamal. I love the name of the podcast, so can't go wrong.
You know, here's a question I have. You cover sports, obviously. A lot of the stuff you cover here is Pacific Coast time here out in the West. Mm-hmm. Do you think there's an East Coast bias in coverage?
Absolutely, I absolutely do. Especially in voting. And I understand it too. So for example, you know, East Coast, I mean, we talk about those Pac-12 games after dark that started at 8 p.m. our time. They start 11 p.m. in the East Coast. And you can say, oh, people can still catch an hour or whatever, but you might catch the first half of a UCLA men's basketball game, and it may be a tight game, and they may run away with it in the second half or something. You don't see that. You just see the final score or what have you. I was just in the Bahamas for a tournament, East Coast time. And I was, you know, thinking to myself, well, the first games start at noon. This was women's basketball tournament. And you're talking UConn, South Carolina, Oregon, some of the top 10 teams, right? And I'm wondering who on a weekday is watching basketball at 9 a.m. on the West Coast? Like, so it goes both ways, right? But I think for a lot of voters, I mean, you have so many voters for polls and for things of that nature on the East Coast or Central or even Mountain Time. And then just that, you know, so I think the West Coast teams, I mean, you got to be really good and really keep somebody's attention to have them up, you know, late on the East Coast watching those games. So I think it's a factor for sure.
So before we get to the news of the day, I wanted to ask you because, you know, I followed your career. As I mentioned, you've been a sideline reporter. You're still a writer for the Associated Press covering mm-hmm. games here on the West Coast. But you've transitioned from the sidelines to the booth. What is it like now to be able to call games?
Wow, it's been an interesting challenge, Jamal, that's for sure. My whole career has been reporting. It's what I know. It's what I think I'm good at. So it's been a challenge, but it's been a fun one. You know, it's something, you know, I've met so many people who do play-by-play who have thought about their whole lives from the time when they were a kid, you know, were doing it, you know, putting the sound down on the TV and doing it since they were kids and calling games. And I never did that. I've been around games. I've had play-by-play guys in my ear for, you know, Angels and Ducks while I was doing sideline reporting for those two teams. So it's been fun. I've been around it, obviously, watching games, going to games. But never thought about doing it myself. And then I had some opportunities with, you know, the Big West to do a couple of games. This was is all really been this year. And then high school football, which was, you know, football was my first love. And I grew up in Colorado. My family had season tickets to the Broncos. So that was fun. And then now doing some college basketball. Again, I'm sure I'll be doing some high school basketball playoffs and things like that. So it's obviously a lot more work. Reporting feels like a bit of a vacation compared to play-by-play, but it's interesting. And really the opportunities for females now is, you know, I'm sure that's, you know, a big part of people are seeing, like, you know, hey, women can do this as well. And why do we have to have, I'm assuming this is the case and why I've gotten opportunities. Why do we have to have, you know, men always calling a women's basketball game? Or, you know, I think as long as you, there's so many terrific men and women out there that, but it's just good to see that, you know, more women are getting opportunities to do that if that's what they want to do. And I've been lucky to be sort of learning on the job, if you will, in that role.
Do you think it helps that there's a sort of a shift in paradigm the way sports is covered? I mean, I'm not that old, but when I was a kid, it really still was only three channels covering mm-hmm. most sports and sort of the start of cable, but now it's sort of exploded.
Right. There's so many outlets. And so I think you're right. There's so many opportunities for so many more people. And I think that's a huge factor. For example, the tournament I just did in the Bahamas was on Flow Sports, which is digital streaming. So up until ESPN had the rights to the semifinals and finals of this Battle for Atlantis tournament. But up until then, if you wanted to watch number one, South Carolina, number two, UConn, number nine, Oregon, South Florida, Oklahoma, all those teams, if you wanted to watch them, you had to watch on a you know, through digital streaming. So I believe you're right. There's so many more opportunities. Amazon is starting to stream sports. I mean, we see, you know, an MLB game of the week on YouTube. So exactly, tons more opportunities for a lot more people. And whether that's, you know, men, women, whoever. I agree. There's a lot more opportunities. So
what's the hardest aspect for you in terms of calling games, you know, in your transition from being on the sideline?
Good question. I think it's, like for reporting and transitioning from the sideline, you already know, like, I don't have to study the Angels roster because I know it. And so every game you're doing the Angels, you know, Trout and Jared Walsh and Ohtani and Brandon Marsh, you know, everybody just by looking at them without their number or not. And high school football for sure is IDing players, you know, because there's 11 on each side of the ball. Right. And so there's 22 kids and it just, I mean, I definitely, excuse me, can't remember all those numbers. So preparing the boards in a way that is, you know, easy. And, you know, that's really frustrating for me if you don't have the name of, you know, when you're watching an NFL game and Matthew Stafford throws a touchdown pass to Cooper Kupp, you're calling it right away. And Stafford, you know, on the play action with the touchdown pass to Cooper Kupp as he's catching it in the end zone. And you see the official signal the touchdown. And for me, sometimes I'm a little late on that, whether it's a, you know, a three pointer or whatever. And I think I know who it is, but I got to look down at my roster just to check. So, and we had eight teams in the Battle for Atlantis tournament. So, you know, those were eight new teams for me. It's like, yeah, I know Paige Beckers and, you know, a couple of, you know, the huge stars, but to make sure you're IDing all those players correct, because you don't want to get that wrong.
And do you also do some analyst work? I thought I saw you occasionally when you were covering Big West, you would do analyst work.
I have done a little bit of analyst work on basketball and even some high school football games, which was a lot of fun. I think it's fun to be able to, you know, try and be a voice for the why is this happening and to tell fun stories. I mean, I love storytelling, and you're able to weave that throughout a broadcast, whether you're reporter, you know, chipping in with a an interesting story or storyline, or whether you're the play-by-play, you know, I was able to weave some of those in there as well. And even as an analyst. So I'm trying to combine my love of storytelling with also the X's and O's and try and still be able to like weave that all in. So good question.
And so obviously you've done some reporting. Who are some of the play, and you've gotten a chance to interact with other play-by-play guys. Who are some of the people that you would consider an influence? You mentioned storytelling. So my brain goes to Vin Scully.
Yeah. You know, I think Vin and Joe Davis, I mean, his stories are wonderful as well. Orals as the color analyst. I mean, his stories as well are pretty cool. Mark Gubiza, you know, his Angels from his career and the, you know, the stories that he's able to tell and weave in there. Those are some of the local ones, but yeah, that nobody, I mean, if you can try and pattern yourself after Vin Scully, nobody, there will never be another Vin Scully, and nobody does it as good as him. But yeah, being able to listen to him for so many years and all the stories that he weaves in and out. And, you know, honestly, one of the things that, you know, having covered a lot of Dodgers as a reporter and sports columnist was being able to interact and see Vin Scully. And I was talking to him one time about his preparation, and he was talking to me. I mean, he's always there early in the booth preparing. And I was thinking, I bet you and I wouldn't know a difference if Vin Scully just got there, you know, an hour before first pitch and did the game, and it would be as wonderful as ever. But he's there hours before the game, like everyone else, even though he's the best to ever do it, and still preparing like that. And in the off season, he would talk about taking a division, you know, whether it was interleague play, and he was doing, you know, their Dodgers are playing AL West teams or whatever, and he would take a division every week and go over those teams and make notes. And I mean, his preparation, even in the off season, it's all the stuff that you don't see, was pretty remarkable. So I was thinking, if the best to ever do it is always preparing that much, you know, the rest of us need to do it about triple time.
Right. Exactly. So then you mentioned the Dodgers, and yesterday I woke up to a lot of news. So what are your thoughts on the recent baseball free agency moves?
Well, when you say you woke up to a lot of news, it's a lot of bad news for Dodger fans, right?
Right.
So Max Scherzer signs that incredible deal with the Mets for, what was it, 40 something a year? 135 for 3 years, I think. So,
yeah.
Was that right?
Yeah, it was $43 million a year, 135 for 3 years.
Yep. And I was never sold on that they were going to be able to re-sign him. I mean, I thought the Angels had a shot. I mean, anybody in California, it seemed to be that he did want to stay in California, and he told teams that, you know, during the season. And especially having played half the season now in Los Angeles, I thought, yeah, that he's definitely going to want to stay out here with the sunshine year round, et cetera. And it's just such a great sports city. But I'm a little shocked. I mean, you know, money talks, as we know, but I'm a little shocked that, at, you know, his age, being in his 30s, with the signing with the Mets, because the Mets are just, and Steve Cohen are just throwing a ton of money at everybody. You know, it's, you know, they just signed Billy Epler to be their general manager, but they don't even have a manager. You don't even know who you're going to play for. So, you know, good for him, you know, great, deal for him, your family and your children's family. I mean, they're going to be taken care of forever, which is nice. But I was a bit surprised by that one. And then Corey Seager, you know, signing with the Texas Rangers, you know, nice to see him get it. He was due to get that big contract, that 300 plus contract as well. I'm a little bit surprised that he didn't decide to sign with the Dodgers again, just because he seemed like he was super comfortable here and loved it. But you know, Rangers were making some bold moves, and you kind of wonder if that sets things up for Clayton Kershaw to sign with his hometown team now. So we shall see. But he already won a World Series, so it's not like he has to go to a team where they can win now. Which I was, again, it's sort of the same thing with Scherzer, right? I mean, he won the World Series with the Nationals, so it's not like he has to go somewhere where he feels like they can win now. I mean, of course he wants to win, and maybe they'll put everything together, but you know, until the Mets can prove that they're not without drama just about every single day, who knows what can happen.
Right. Exactly. I would say that, I guess I'm a little more less surprised with the the Seager signing, because, young man, first big contract of his career, could be the last one, probably wanted a little bit more security, in terms of years. I'm sure the Dodgers could have matched in terms of money. Scherzer, I agree with you. I was hoping he'd want to stay just because it's the end of his career. Why make another move? He seemed comfortable with the team, the culture. And he would essentially be, I mean, he would be, I, in my opinion, he would still be ace number one or 1A for the team, versus going to the Mets, where it's pretty much DeGrom's team from a pitching staff perspective.
Right. But,
I mean, you're right. I mean, who can turn down that kind of money? Regardless of where it is on a map sometimes. I mean, it just the way these guys consider things,
and they'll get a lot more bang for their buck in Texas, right? No state taxes. So
right.
I'm always amazed when athletes talk about that, like the Phil Mickelsons, and I mean, he still lives in San Diego, but I mean, he was talking about moving to Florida,
right?
Tiger Woods, who grew up in California, in Southern California, you know, moving to Florida. And when they say it's because of state taxes, I'm like, but if you already make this much money, and yes, you're getting a lot of tickets, you're still making a ton of money.
Right.
And why they're worried about, I mean, you're talking about a $1 billion athlete in Tiger Woods, and you're worried about the taxes. Okay. You know, so, but it is a nice benefit, I'm sure, for Corey Seager and his family. They'll be pocketing a lot more of that 300 plus in the pocket instead of going to state taxes.
The only thing I'll say about Tiger Woods and his math is, it's as a Cal grad, you know, it's probably due to a Stanford education that he can't really do the math. That's all I'll say. the team that you cover are the Angels. What are your thoughts on their free agency so far? They signed Noah Syndergaard. It's looking like they're trying to get more pitching. I mean, they have the MVP of the league. They have probably the best player in baseball coming off injury. Another free agent signing in Rendon, who was injured as well last year. Seems like they need the pitching because the hitting is sort of set.
Well, I'm a little disappointed for them and for Mike Trout in that, they needed a ton of starting pitching. And yeah, that's great that they got Thor. Noah Syndergaard's going to help them a lot if he can stay injury free. We haven't seen a lot of him in the past couple of years because of that. But, he can definitely set the tone for your pitching staff. They lose Alex Cobb as well. I know I was just trying to look up to see Marcus Stroman, who is still out there, who I know they're trying to sign as well, it looks like. But they just didn't, I mean, they really needed like two top tier guys in that starting rotation. It doesn't look like they're going to get a second one as of right now. So, they still have a solid pitching staff. I think, again, you know, if Ohtani can follow up, his MVP year with, another solid performance, pitching and hitting, if he can, successfully do that again for an entire season. And there's nothing to say that he can't. You just, hope that we saw so many injuries this year that he stays injury free. Again, same thing with Thor, but they missed out. They could have, imagine if they had signed Max Scherzer. They didn't, but they, they needed a top tier guy like that. Mike Trout signed that lifetime contract there, and he needs pitching. He can't do everything himself. So it'll be good for protection for Ohtani. Like you said, when all the guys get healthy, Rendon and Trout and Ohtani, that's going to be a fierce lineup. But, if you're not solid 1 through 5, it's difficult to win games, especially in the playoffs. And You'd love to see them get back to the playoffs. I want to see Mike Trout in the playoffs. I want to see Ohtani in the playoffs, and they haven't been since 2014.
Are you hearing anything about, now I'm asking you to put your reporter hat on, are you hearing anything about but the lockout chances here? I mean, it's coming up this week. The CBA is supposed to expire, I believe, Wednesday night. Are you suspecting that it might be prolonged like it's been predicted, or it'll be resolved sooner?
That part is hard to tell. I mean, we're headed for the lockout for sure, but whether it's going to be prolonged apart or not is the part that's, I mean, anybody's guess. So, I don't know that baseball can handle a prolonged, you know, and the fans can handle another prolonged, deal. They've made so much headway over the last few years, and there's so many superstars, and you look at the money that guys have signed for, and I don't think fans are going to be super happy when you're talking about all this money, which is of course why guys want to sign before Wednesday and get their physicals done. But I just think that would be a disservice to the fans if it was prolonged. And again, I hope it's not, but it's going to be hard to tell.
Now, moving on to the other bombshell for this, I guess, weekend, but sort of official yesterday, Lincoln Riley is coming to USC from Oklahoma. Yesterday was the press conference introducing him, so it's official, no longer unstated rumor. What do you think is USC going to be good right away, or do you foresee some growing pains?
I mean, perhaps some more growing pains, but they got the right man for the job. They have missed on so many recent hires, and he just had you know, such an impact in Oklahoma. You look at the quarterbacks that he's, you know, tutored there, Kyler Murray and Jalen Hurts among them. He's been able to recruit. He's been able to get the most out of those recruits and talented players and prepare them for the NFL. And I think kids know that. SC, you know, was not over the last, I would say at least what, 7 or 8 years, it was not a done deal. It was recruits, especially the top guys in Los Angeles. Normally they would have SC and UCLA at the top of their list, and that was not the case anymore. And SC being such a storied program and having such a history about it, it was, you know, pretty sad to see the levels that they've dropped. And, you know, it wasn't just football program. It was, you know, the athletic department, the upheaval in the athletic from the president to the upheaval in the athletic department and Lynn Swann's tenure. And, you know, so many things had happened there. So it's nice to see that they were able to make a big splash hire. You know, I'm a little surprised they were able to get him. And Lincoln Riley was saying, you know, these talks started Sunday, and by, you know, Monday, he's the SC football coach. And so, you know, pretty cool to get a guy who's that young, that good at recruiting, and that successful on the field, you know, to be their coach. It was a little shocking that they were able to convince him, because it wasn't looked at as a gem of a job anymore. So.
Oh, is that what your surprise is, just because of where the program is at? You didn't think somebody would want to come into that?
Somebody of his stature? Yeah, but you know, anytime you can combine, if you can really speak to someone in terms of, I mean, it's not like he came from Boise or something like that, where you're talking about, I would have thought maybe a younger coach who is either coaching a mid-major or, you know, a non-power school, Power Five school, perhaps would have wanted this job. So it's awesome for SC. You know, I hope he works out for them, and I hope he gets, you know, SC back to prominence again and competing for national championships. You know, I think we've kind of missed that out here on the West Coast, having that team to battle the Alabamas and the Auburns and the Clemsons and, you know, on that national stage. So they've had some pretty embarrassing losses this year. The amount of fans has been low. And I think just the enthusiasm, the energy, and the hope for this program again is going to be back.
Do you ascribe to the fact, because, you know, you mentioned you're a Colorado Buff grad, I went to Cal. Do you ascribe to the fact that if USC is better, it elevates the whole conference?
Absolutely. 100%. Okay. I would say USC, Oregon, Stanford, those are the kind of schools where, I mean, you're going to get top national recruits, and the better those schools are, the better the whole conference is, and the more attractive it becomes for recruits and coaches. And I think it was big for Lincoln Riley to leave Oklahoma and come to USC as well. I think that can have a lot of, you know, ramifications. I mean, you look at the caliber of coaches that are already coaching, you know, and the fact that UCLA was able to get Chip Kelly, and I'm not saying he's worked out. I mean, it's still a, you know, kind of a mixed bag with him. Sorry about the Cal game, by the way.
I'm used to it.
And as a Buff fan, I am too. But no, they're just by being able to you know, convince a coach like that to come here. I agree with you that, or at least I subscribe to that as well, that the better the top teams are, the better the conference is going to be overall.
Now going to, you know, the other side of town in terms of what you cover, the Lakers. You've had to watch them play. And I want to know, are you surprised that they've struggled as much as they have?
I am and I'm not. I mean, 12 new players, even if you have LeBron James and Anthony Davis, that's a lot. I think I guess I thought Russell Westbrook would have fit in a little bit more than he is. I mean, he's just had some tough games. He makes some brilliant plays and then just some bonehead plays. And I guess I just didn't think that he would struggle so much with this team. In any team with LeBron James, of course, he's missed several games as well due to injury. You know, they're really having to shoulder a lot of this. But yeah, to see them where they are in the standings, it's tough. What, seventh in the Western Conference standings, 11-11. It's a very lackluster team. And, you know, whether you have all those new players or not, you expect the Lakers to perform at a certain level. And it's just, it's just not a good look the way they're playing right now.
Do you think age has to do with any of it? I know a lot of people say, well, they're a slow team yet, but it doesn't feel that way. Somebody did a metric where Anthony Davis is among the top 10 slowest in terms of playing. And I'm like, Anthony Davis is only 26. So it can't be just age.
Right. It's not just age, but I mean, it certainly doesn't help. I mean, especially with being prone to injuries and things of that nature. So I don't know. I mean, they're giving up too many points, you know, defensively. They're not good, and you can't. So it doesn't matter all the offensive firepower that you have if you can't protect the rim. And you know, I mean, there's so many teams in the Western Conference that have such good guards and stuff. And who's, you know, who's your lockdown defender for the Lakers? I'm not sure I know yet, but they're giving up 114 points a game, which is worst in the Western Conference. So second worst in the Western Conference to the Memphis Grizzlies. Can't win a lot of games like that.
Yeah, I know. Trust me. Everybody in the house knows when the Lakers are on in my house, unfortunately.
Uh-oh. Yeah. Hopefully things aren't being thrown around, baseball caps. And
No. I'm supposed to be an example to the children, but still. So you've, as a sideline reporter, you did cover the Anaheim Ducks. Mm-hmm. They recently fired their general manager, Bob Murray. Bob Murray had been there since 2008. I think that was the longest GM tenure in the NHL with one team.
Correct.
Was the news surprising to you based on the facts?
Yes. But I think based on, you know, what happened in the league and certainly with the Chicago Blackhawks and just that awful situation, you know, that happened with the player and sexual assault by the video coach. The fact that it was came out publicly finally 10 years later, that was kind of set a precedent, I think, where if there's anything, you know, going on in your organization, whether it's from the top down, you know, you have to be able to speak up if you can. And I think that's probably, it seems like what happened, you know, with the Ducks situation. And Bob Murray admitted, you know, in the statement that he released that he'd made some mistakes and he was going to go into, you know, rehabilitation program as well for alcohol, according to reports. So a surprise, yeah, I don't know, but I'm just, you know, the NHL has a lot of work to do in terms of being able to support its players and coaches and teams in terms of concussions. I mean, that's still a big thing in terms of concussions, assault, and things of that nature. They have a long way to go. So, and I think, you know, Bob Murray from his statement will tell you that, you know, it's the, you know, he's got work to do. And he's going to do it. And I honestly, I think that what happened there was a result of, you know, someone or some people feeling more comfortable discussing things that had happened that were not okay. And I believe the Ducks filed that under misconduct. And so, you know, I hope the best for, you know, everybody that was affected, and certainly for Bob Murray, who is, you know, obviously said he needs some help. But you know, these are steps forward, but the NHL still has a lot of work to do. And Kyle Beach and the situation that happened to him is just, is so troubling. And hopefully he can find some peace. But I'm glad he had the courage to be able to put his name in his face, which for some people just makes stories that much more real, you know, when they can see somebody's face tied to that. And, you know, as we saw with Ray Rice, again, when you hear about something like that, until you see the video, right. It, for whatever reason, for some people, they, you know, they need that for it to be taken seriously. And so, for this, I'm, you know, it was very courageous of him, Tebow put his name and face to that and say, this is what happened to me. And he's trying to ensure that it doesn't happen to other people as well.
With these kind of stories that come out as a reporter, do you hope that they do shine more light? I mean, because it seems strange that in 2021, going in 2022, we're still hearing about these kind of situations that sort of have been cleaned up in other, whether it's corporate parts of business or just doesn't seem like it fits in the cultural behavior of society anymore. Why are these things still popping up? You know, you're talking about in the NHL, same thing was happening in the Women's Soccer League, know, terrible stories that come out of USA Gymnastics, things like that. Why are we still hearing about these things that seem to should have been gone away to the wayside to a different time when, you know, things like this, there wasn't a light shined on them, I guess.
Well, it's a good question, but I think we're more receptive to it. I mean, if you look at mental health issues, you know, 20 years ago, if a player said, like Carey Price had said, you know, I need to take some time off, and I think it was about a month that he took off to take care of himself, what would people have said? They would have said, oh, he's soft, right? He's not at all. It's very courageous of him and very inspirational to show other guys, hey, if you're dealing with stuff, you know, you can take some time off, because sports is secondary to the human. And I think as fans, sometimes people used to think, no, if a guy takes that much time off, like they're not committed to the sport or whatever. When I just think it's, we as a society are so much more receptive to a Dak Prescott saying, hey, I've got, you know, issues I've had to work through. Talking about going to therapy, making it okay for others to be able to think, you know, hey, if I've got problems I need to discuss with other people, I can do that. Because these sports are just so, I mean, I think both for men and women, you know, they used to have that, that label or that, you know, that kind of mantra that you're not tough enough if you're doing that. So, I mean, I just think so many more athletes have come out and done this. And look at, you know, Meta World Peace, what he did 10 years ago. He did it before, I think a lot of people, you know, when he said people thought he was, I hate to use the term crazy, but people were saying things like that when he sold his NBA championship ring and auctioned it off to, you know, for a mental health organization. And that was huge. And he, remember after he won the championship, was it 08 or 09?
2010.
Sorry. Thank you, Lakers fan, for right, exactly. helping me out with that one. But I mean, I just remember him saying after on a live television interview, he wanted to thank his therapist because he was thanking everybody that helped him along the way. Right. And that was huge for him.
Yes.
So I think from starting from things like that, we are just more receptive to it and open to it as a society. And we don't kind of turn the other cheek and think, oh, those, you know, players aren't tough enough or they're too soft or whatever. And I don't think we do that now. I mean, you look at Skip Bayless and his comments after Dak Prescott said what he said after losing two members of his family within what, a year, year and a half, whatever the time was, which could break anybody. And, you know, then you have people that are still saying things like what Skip Bayless said, which was, you know, he's got to be a leader of this team. Like he can't, you know, that doesn't make him a leader of this team. And it's like, no, it absolutely makes him more of a leader to show guys you can have the courage to get help and be a better person for you, for your teammates, for your family. So again, I just think we're more receptive to it as a society. And I mean, you look at the gymnasts, was it Michigan State?
Yes.
Where the doctor, you know, molested and assaulted so many athletes, and they did come forward and told somebody, and those people swept it under the rug, just like what happened to Kyle Beach with the Chicago Blackhawks. I mean, there was a meeting of a bunch of, you know, coaches and executives who were in this meeting who thought better of hiding that and dealing with it later, and then allowing this video coach to then go on and work with other kids and do this again to a minor, because winning at all costs meant more to them than protecting this person, which was awful. So again, I just think now if something like that happens and somebody tells somebody, like, things are going to be done. It used to just be swept under the rug. Not anymore. So hopefully.
And that's my hope too. And I think you hit it on the head that I think winning at all costs trumped those things. And this day and age, there's just too much of a, there's too many eyes, too many people who are open to understand that they're, that you need to move in the right direction and not consider winning the best move.
Right.
So just going back to some more lighter news, you've worked with the Big West covering their tournaments, both NCAA men's and women's tournaments to get into the Final Four. Here's one question. I stole this off another podcast. Schools like Pepperdine and LMU, why can't they be the new Duke?
Good question. Or the new, like, build a program like a Gonzaga?
Or Villanova, example, maybe. Or, you know, yeah.
Yeah. So you're saying, why can't these mid-major programs, like some of these, could throw in a UC Irvine or a UC Davis, why can't they get to that level? I think they could. I mean, I absolutely think they could. It's based on the coach, the recruiting. I think as long as you have consistency, you know, like with a Gonzaga or Pepperdine's had a lot of coaching changes. But whenever a coach has success at that level, I mean, they're usually going to get swooped up by, you know, a Power Five team. So I think that has a lot to do with it. But if you can get a Mark Few to stay somewhere, you know, for two decades, then it can happen. And I love that, because you're talking about an athletic department that doesn't have the kind of money like a Duke or a North Carolina, but they have, you know, a lot of players with a lot of heart, and maybe they aren't as big or as fast as some of the top recruits in the country, but you can get those kind of recruits. I think it just, again, remains if you can get a top level coach to stay there, which again, it's just so tough because of the money that they're going to get courted by the Power Five school.
Cause I've driven past Villanova in the summer and it looks wonderful. Mm-hmm. But I can't imagine being there in the winter trying to work on your basketball game when it's as cold as it can get sometimes in Pennsylvania and Philadelphia versus me come out and play in Malibu. I mean, I don't know how right. That isn't like, that should be, recruiting should fix itself by location. I understand money could be a problem for some kids because they're private and it's difficult when it comes to finances. Some might be far away, that kind of situation, but it's like, come on, come play in Malibu, come play at Pacific Palisades, you know, and turn us into a top 30 program in basketball. I just think it's just ripe, I think, especially in this day and age where information flows, that I'm always surprised that those aren't the biggest teams in the Big West versus an Irvine or, you know, now San Diego and Davis are putting up big wins.
Yeah. Well, I think Villanova, for example, that you know, having a coach like Jay Wright, I don't know what season this is for him, but he's such a great recruiter and he's built such a program there. Another thing is when you're in those Power Five conferences, you're getting 5, 6, 7 teams to the tournament. When you look at the Big West, the only guarantee is the team that wins the tournament. So you can have a great regular season, and it's happened before where let's say UC Irvine has been, 25-2, and they lose in the final or they lose in the semifinal and get upset. They are not going to be in that large bid. I mean, it just doesn't happen. So I think that's probably also another thing that kids consider. It's like, you know, you've got a lot better shot to get to the NCAA tournament as a member of one of those, you know, Big Five programs than you do with the mid-major conferences, which, you know, only get that automatic bid by winning the conference tournament. So I'd probably say that's part of it. And if I was playing college basketball, I'd want to go to a team that was going to the NCAA tournament, right? I mean, that's where it's at. That's one of the most fun things in sports, pro, college, whatever.
Yeah, but you're from Colorado, so you don't care about snow flurries in December. I'm sure you would probably think if you were in North Carolina and it snows one day, you know, you probably think it was like a regular summer day for you. Versus, I'm a California kid.
Right.
I couldn't handle going to some of these places that these kids, like Oklahoma. We talked about Lincoln Riley, his top recruits for 2022. They're all from Los Alamitos. It's like, why do you want to be in Norman, Oklahoma? But you know, if you got great recruiters and a great program, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I was talking to the Buffalo women's basketball coach. Imagine trying to recruit to Buffalo.
Right.
And she said, I tell all my recruits, it's always 70 degrees in the gym. And I was thinking, yeah, that's a good line, right? That's a great line. And I'm sure that works. But what about, you know, getting the snow boots and trudging through the snow and starting your car or walking across campus, and that's not 70 degrees.
Right, right, exactly.
I got soft after living in California for so long, but traveling with the Ducks, for a few years on their schedule. I mean, you're talking everywhere from Minnesota to Edmonton and Calgary and Winnipeg in December, January, February, and you build back up your ability to deal with cold really quick. I bought some -30 degree socks, which before I went to Winnipeg, I never knew there was such a thing. But I was prepared.
That's hilarious. That's funny. I've taken up so much of your time. I really appreciate it. I love having you on. I want for you to plug yourself, where people can find you on social media and where they can find you broadcasting these days.
Sure. Well, thanks, Jamal. So I'm a little bit everywhere. You can find most of my stuff I'm doing on sports on at Jill Painter, which is my Twitter account, and then Jill Painter Lopez, which is my Instagram account. And I usually post, if I have an appearance on MLB Network or if I am, you know, doing play-by-play at a tournament or wherever it is. But I usually post there from Vin Scully's birthday yesterday to when he turned 94 to whatever kind of fun stuff I'm doing. So I'll usually post there and people can feel free to reach out there as well.
Are you doing it? You recently went to the Bahamas. I guess I should have mentioned that before, but you went to the Bahamas, like you mentioned, you covered the Atlantis tournament.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Covering the women's side. Are you doing any more play-by-play coming up?
I should be. I don't have anything on this schedule at the moment, but I should be doing some more things. I think some high school basketball is coming up, maybe some more high school football postseason and things of that nature. So excited for that. And certainly the winter sports. Might be doing some reporting on some basketball games coming up. And then, of course, we have baseball. Hopefully, I don't know how long it might be delayed, but, hopefully that'll start up again in the spring. And some hockey here and there as well, some NBA. I get kind of the cool thing about my job is I'm, as some people say, Jill of all trades. I get to expert at none, but I get to cover a bunch of different sports. And that's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I always enjoy seeing you and Alana Rizzo doing High Heat. Talking baseball, it's great to see that, you know, you got a sideline reporter and a sideline reporter, and now they're taking over MLB Network.
She's a great friend of mine. We both went to Colorado. We didn't know each other at the time, but we both love dogs, wine, baseball. So
that's awesome.
She's a great friend, and it's great. I mean, I certainly miss her on Dodgers coverage, but it's great to see her shining at MLB Network.
Based on all my Dodgers Twitter friends, yes, everybody misses Alana on baseball. It'd be interesting to see what her perspective would be covering the team right now with all the changes. And I almost forgot, you are an entrepreneur as well, so plug that, because I'm a customer.
Yes, you've joined in the Clean Crafted wine business. Alana Rizzo started it, and so I ordered some wine from her, and it's basically Clean Crafted wine is wine without added sulfites or sugars, and most of our bottles have less than a gram of sugar for the whole bottle. So if you eat a small piece of chocolate, you probably get more sugar in that than if you were to have an entire bottle of wine. Not that I'm saying to drink an entire bottle of wine by yourself in one sitting, but I just think it's a cool company. It's called Scout and Cellar, and it's a woman founded company. And we support local farmers and local vineyards from around the world, France, Chile. We've got some wines from Napa, and basically they use biodynamic farming practices, which just means, you know, they don't use pesticides and it's all cleanly produced. So none of the junk and all of the good taste. And that's scoutandcellar.com/Jill Painter. If anybody needs any holiday gifts or wine for their holiday table. But it's kind of been fun to learn a little bit more about wine on the side.
That's awesome. Hey, like I said, I'm a customer. So I would, for everyone listening, I would suggest that you go to Scout and Cellar and buy some wines from Jill. Thanks again for coming on. Really appreciate you having you. Love talking sports, and would love to have you come back again. Obviously, there's always going to be news, and I have a feeling, like you said, Jill of all trades, you're going to be covering it. So thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Jamal. I certainly appreciate it being on the West Coast Bias. I appreciate your time and all your questions, and love to come back on.
Thanks again.
All right, Jamal, great job on that interview.
It was great. It was fun. It's nice to be able to discuss all the things that we discuss here on West Coast Bias with a legit superstar journalist in the sports world.
Now, you need to leave so I can edit all these podcasts. I got like 3 hours of podcasting to edit, and you need to take your lovely wife home and, you know, finish your date night in style. All right. So, Jamal, until next time, what do we say?
We're the West Coast, the best coast. We are West Coast Bias.
The West Coast Bias.
Dude, bro, we place a ball on the West Coast.